Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Nun Bet Amud Bet by the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Hamitamei, Vamidameya, Vaminasech, Bishogeg Potur, Bemizid Chayav. All these are types of damage that one creates. One is by being mitamei, causing tuma to someone else's produce objects. Midameya is mixing truma and chulin of another party. Hamitamei, in the simple reading, we'll see in the Gemara, maybe not, is that he does nisuchayayin. He uses someone's wine to do nisuchayayin, and therefore makes them asur. In all these cases, there is no visible damage to the object, or what is otherwise known as hezek she'enu nikar. It's damage, but damage that is not discernible in the object. So the Mishnah here says, v'shogeg patur, v'mizid chayav. V'shogeg, you are patur if you did it that way, v'mizid chayav. The question of which one is the tikkun olam here depends on what your default position is. If you believe hezek she'enu nikar shmei hezek, that it is called damage, then technically you should be chayav both for mezid and shogeg. The fact that you're patur by shogeg is the tikkun olam. The other hand, if you believe hezek she'enu nikar lo shmei hezek is not called damage, then b'shogeg patur makes sense, b'mezid chayav is the tikkun olam. So there is Tikkun Olam in the Mishnah. Which part of the Mishnah is the Tikkun Olam depends on what your base position is with regards to Chezek She'enu Nikar. So Itmar Minaseich. What is the Minaseich in our Mishnah? Rav Amar Minaseich Mamash. It's literally Nisuch HaYayin. Shmuel Amar Me'arev. It means to mix the Yayin Nesech with something else. And you're causing the damage by taking that something that is Asur B'Hana'ah and mixing it together with other objects. Manda mar mi'arev, my time alo mar minaseich. Why does Shmuel say mixing and not literally doing nisuch? Amalacha minaseich kamle birabimineh. When it comes to nisuch hayayin, there you're chayav for worshipping avodah zarah, and you're chayav mita. And we have a principle when a person is chayav mita, that exempts them from monetary payments in that situation. So over here when he's minaseich the yayin, yes, he damages the wine, but he also subjects himself to capital punishment for worshipping avodah zarah. V'idach, what does Rav do about that? Kid Rabbi Yirmiya. He holds like Rabbi Yirmiya. Amar Rabbi Yirmiya. Mishat hagba'a hu dekana. He becomes chayav in the gezel, in the damage of the object from the time that he picks it up. Mitchayev binasho lo havi ad she'at nisuch. He only becomes culpable for the capital punishment once he does the nisuch hayayin. So we can separate between the two issues, the issue of gzela and damage, and the capital punishment for the worshipping of avodah zarah, because they happen at a different moment. And since the capital punishment happens later, then he will be chayav in the mamon up front. So that's how Rav explains that position of Rabbi Yirmiya. Tosfot over here says, with regards to Shmuel's position, doesn't Shmuel hold of Rabbi Yirmiya? Or we have other positions in Shas, in Gemara and Baba Kama, as well as in other places where they're able to bifurcate between the din or the chiyuv hamamon and the chiyuv mita. And as long as you can demonstrate that the chiyuv mamon precedes the chiyuv mita, then we do bifurcate the din and you will be chayav for the mamon, because we don't say kamalei b'dirabimineh in that instance. So Tosafot explains that Shmuel fundamentally does agree with Rabbi Yirmiya's position. He just thinks that it's different over here. So one answer he says is, the Yesh Lamar, the Sever Shmuel, the Hagba, Tzorech Nisuchu, Tvei, that picking up of the Yayin Nesech, to pour it, is integral to the Nisuch HaYayin. Diev Shal the Nisuch, below Hagba. It's impossible to do the Nisuch HaYayin without picking it up. Aval Hatam, Ef Shal Achila, below Hagba. In that case, the other case that Tosfot is bringing, it's possible to eat an object without picking it up. Shmuel will distinguish and say that the Hagbah is integral to the pouring or to the Nisuch HaYayin in front of the Avodah Zarah, or the way that Gemara describes it in Avodah Zarah, it's Kishkuch, that he does some sort of movement with his fingers that dedicates the wine to the Avodah Zarah. And in that way, he will not separate between the lifting of the Nisuch HaYayin and the pouring of the Nisuch HaYayin, or Inami, he says, Kasavar de Efshar the Nasech Belo Hagba. He does believe you can do Nisuch without Hagba. Filoachi Patur, Kevin da Shat Nisuch lo Mechayev. Tekim le Rabbi Meyashat Hagba Nami Miftar. Or, You could say that the reason for Shmuel is even though Hagbah is not necessary for Nisuch, still he thinks that the tour of Kamlai D'Rabbi Minei affects not just the Nisuch Hayayin, but also the Hagbah, because it's all a part of the Sha'at Nisuch. He looks at it as a broader picture of when the Nisuch Hayayin is taking place. And therefore, he says that the Chiyuv Mita will be poter that Hagba'ah, that raising of the Yayin in order to do the Yayin Nesach. So for that reason, Shmuel disagrees, even though maybe he thinks Rabbi Yirmiyah's principle in general is correct, it's just not applicable over here. Not applicable either because Hagba'ah is Tzorech Nisuch, or because the Hagba'ah and the Nisuch are considered to be one time period, even though they may not be necessary or integrally connected, but they're all at one time period, and therefore you're covered by the Chiyuv Mita. According to Rav, who says that we're talking about real Nisuch Hayayin, why doesn't he say Me'arev like Shmuel? That's no different than the case of Midameya. One is just with liquids, one is with solids. So Midameya is mixing, and Minaseich is mixing. V'idach, what about Shmuel? It's a good question on Shmuel's position. You have Midameya and Minaseich, according to him, which is Me'arev. Both of them are found in the Mishnah. Knoso hu, umiknoso lo yofinan. It is a penalty. It's a knas midrabanan. And a knas midrabanan, we don't learn because knas by definition is something in particular that is directed at a particular action. Similar to the way that we view a halacha lemoshe misinai, which is that it's not really subject to logic. It's an area where we want to penalize people, and doesn't mean you can extrapolate that din. Even as logical as it is, we don't extrapolate the din. And therefore, for each item that you want to penalize or have a knas about, you need to state it explicitly. Uman de yolif knosa miknosa, the one who does learn from penalty to penalty, meaning Rav, who's willing to say that midameya minaseich are close enough that we can extrapolate from one to the other. Kohane lamali. Why do I need all the examples in the Mishnah? Tzricha, I need all the examples in the Mishnah. Diatana mitamei, had you only taught me about mitamei in the Mishnah, itruma, if he's mitamei truma, habamina mishum deka mafsid la degamre, because he is ruining it completely. That's not exactly true. The Gemara in a second will show you another position where it's not ruining it completely, but it's pretty well ruined. Which is that its primary utility has been taken away from it, which is that normally truma is consumed, can be eaten. Once you make truma tmeah, then you can only give it to your animals, or you can burn it, and you can get some hana from it. So you've ruined its primary utility in doing that. So then you would think that's the problem. Imitamei chulin, if it's a case where it's mitamei chulin, mishum da asur li grom tuma l'chulin sh'Eretz Yisrael. Because there's a restriction against being mitamei chulin inside of Eretz Yisrael. Aval midameya aim alone. By the case of mixing truma and chulin, maybe that would not be the case. Maybe we wouldn't penalize. Because by midameya, the mix of truma and chulin is not asur legamre. It's something that can be eaten by a kohen. It can't be eaten by others, but it can be eaten by a kohen. So it reduces its value, but it doesn't take away its primary utility, which is that it can be eaten by the kohen. V'yishmeina midameya, if you only told me about midameya, mishum deshkiach. Because that's a common occurrence to get truma and chulin mixed up. Ava mitamei delo shchiach, being mitamei, someone's property or objects is not something that's so common. Aim alo. Saved over there, they were not kones. So now you have a reason why you need midameya, and you have a reason why you need mitamei. So now v'yishmina and mitamei umidameya. So say you tell us both of those. Mishom delo kimlei b'derabaminei. Because they don't involve capital punishment. Aval minaseich, the gimlei b'rabbi minei, when we talk about the minaseich, which involves capital punishment, emelo, maybe you would not be chayav, kamash malon ke Rabbi Yirmiyah. And kamash malon is like Rabbi Yirmiyah, that there's a separation in time between the monetary obligation and the capital punishment, and therefore you are subject to a kenas, even in the case of minaseich. Ulaha detani avua de Rabbi Avin. According to the braita that they have from Avua de Rabbi Avin, Birishona hayu omrim. In the beginning, this was the institution, the Rabbanan, Hamitamei ve'aminaseich, that those were the two that were first, Chazru lamar, af hamidameya. And then they added in midameya later. So then, in that structure, you would have to come up with a reason as to why mitamei and minaseich are unique, and you would have thought the penalty applies to them and not to mitameya. Kohani lamali. Then explain to me again the logic behind this. Tzricha, we need all of them. Diyesh menina mitamei mishum delokim leib derabimine. I would thought you're chayab for mitamei because there's no capital punishment involved. Ava minaseich dekim leib derabimine emalo. By minaseich, which involves capital punishment, I would have thought not. V'yash me'ina minaseich. If you taught me about minaseich, mishum dekam mafsid le the gamre. Now here, when we talk about mafsid the gamre, this is really the gamre, because once it becomes used for avodah zarah, it's even asur b'hana'ah. There's nothing you can do with it. It is completely lost. Ava mitamei, domal mafsid le the gamre. By mitamei, you're not ruining it completely. Either because by tumat chulin, it can still be utilized by people who are not shomer their chulin betara, or by the case of truma, even though you can no longer use it for its primary utility, it still has utility. It can be used to give to the animals. It can be used for burning. Meaning that there are things you can do with truma tmeya, which is absolutely not true, by yayin nesech, which can't be used for anything. It's a surbana. So emelo, so I would think in that case, there's no penalty. And therefore, I wouldn't put the knas there. That's the reason for each of these items have to be mentioned specifically. V'yishmein and hanetarte, if you mention these two, mishum dehefse merubeh, there's a heavy loss here. In both those cases, you've either, by the yayin esech, eliminated it completely, you've gone to zero value, and in the case of b'mitamei, truma, you've dropped its value significantly when you're mitamei the truma. You've taken down its value significantly. It can no longer be eaten, so its value has dropped significantly. Aval midameya, in the case where it is the mixture, the hefse muat, there it's a reduction in value, meaning that it can only be utilized by the kohen or eaten by the kohen now, so it has lesser value on the marketplace because only kohanim can purchase it or use it. But maybe, emalo, there you wouldn't put on a knas, tzricha. I need all three of them for that reason. And again here, the Gemara is giving you the reasons why you might have isolated each one of these knasot, and why Rav requires that you mention each one of them individually in the Mishnah. Because Rav believes we could extrapolate from one knas to the other. That means if you had one, you should know the others. The reason we don't extrapolate is because of what the Gemara just went through to show you that each one individually has a chumrah, has a reason why you would put a knas on it, and not extrapolate to the others. And as Tosafot points out over here, this sugya is all according to Rabbi Yochanan, who we're going to see in 1 second, says that hezek shenu nikar, eino hezek. It's not considered to be hezek, because according to Chizkiah, the reason that you need to list all these things in the Mishnah is to tell you you're patur by shogeg. So according to Chizkiah, it's obvious why you have to list all of these items. Each one of them comes with a patur for the hezek that you did. According to Rabbi Yochanan, where it's a knas, and you're chayav, then you should have been able to extrapolate. And since we don't extrapolate, you have to give me a reason why each one of these individually is unique. Tosafot over here notes that what we just quoted over here from Avua the Rabbi Avin, Berishonah Hayu Omrim, he says, Ubegozel Batra, in Baba Kamo, Ktuva Ipcha, it's written just the opposite. Vezu achat misugyot hafuchot, and this is one of the flipped sugyot in Shas, which is that Tosafot mentions this in a number of places, both with regards to Amoraim, where attribution is reversed. Sometimes we have sugyot, where Abaye has one opinion, Rava has another opinion, and then you go to another place in Shas, and their opinions are exactly reversed. Tosafot calls that a sugya hafucha, or where the content of the sugya is reversed, the order of the sugya is reversed, and he calls that a sugya hafucha, which is a phenomenon in Shas, where sometimes we'll have a whole sugya, and then you go to another place and it's reversed, or the opinions are completely reversed. And the reasons for that are twofold. One is the fact that they're probably trying to get something to be aliba de hilchata, and therefore they want to attribute the daya to an individual who's going to, we're going to paskin like, and therefore it impacts on which is the halacha, but then you have to know which one is the ikar sugya. And that happens to be a problem in some of those cases where you get the Rishonim paskening in different directions, because we know Halacha k'Rava over Abaye, but you have to know which one is the primary sugya that we're trying to get Rava's opinion to be. Or because here when you're talking about a sugya where they know the different opinions, they're trying to give attribution to the opinions, That's something in transmission that could be faulty. You know two parties argued. You know they argue about the two sides of the argument. You just don't know which belongs to which. And each sugya, they take a different position with regards to whose opinion it is. And we see that other places in Shas, where the Gemara says, these two Marim argue, these are their two opinions, we just don't know which one belongs to whom. Amar Chizkiya. So Chizkiya says here, Dvar Torah, Echad Shugeg, Vechad Mezid, Chayav. Mina Torah, you're Chayav, both in Shugeg, and in Mezid. My Taima. What's the reason here? Hezek Sheinu Ikar, Shmei Hezek. Because damage, even though it's not discernible, is Chayav Mina Torah. So then, if you are chayav min haTorah, then why by shogeg did they say you are patur? Because kedei shiodiyu, so that he will tell them, he will notify the party about what happened. If you make him chayav, he's going to be reluctant to notify the party about what happened, because then they're going to cause him to pay. He's going to have to make restitution on the damage that he did. So for that reason, he's going to hide it, or he's going to cover it up. But if we allow him to be patur, then he'll notify the other party, and then the other party won't eat the isur. Here he makes it tamei, or he makes it a mix of chulin and truma. If he's going to be culpable to pay for it, he's not going to say anything. If he's patur, he might tell the other guy, don't eat it, because it's a mixture now. So we give that dispensation in order to allow him to notify the other party. For Chizkiya, that will be the tikkun olam, that even though by shogeg it should have been chayav, because by Adama Mazik, it's irrespective of whether it was B'mezid or Shogeg, you are Chayav. So here, the Ptur and Shogeg is the Tikkun Olam. Why? Kedei Shiodiyu. So that they will tell the other party about the Yisur that happens. Yachi, I feel B'mezid, not me. So here too, why don't you say the same thing by Mezid, it should be Ptur. Hashtado Zuke Kamikavein. Over here where he intends to do damage, Odil Omodile, he's not going to tell him about it. And as Rashi explains, because the whole point of what he's doing is to upset the other party or to cause pain and suffering and difficulty to the other party. It's no fun if you don't tell the other party. Just to do the damage without informing him about the damage doesn't get the result that he wants. So when you do it b'mezid, the only reason to do it b'mezid is because you want to hurt this person. You only hurt the person if you tell them about it. And therefore, he's going to notify them to get the result that he wants. Because he wants them to feel the pain of what he's done. And therefore, it's not relevant by Mezid to say that he's going to cover it up. That's what Rashi adds over here, that even though you could say that he's doing intentionally to cause him to trip up in the Isur, the fact that this individual is doing it by Mezid already shows that he wants the other party to feel the pain and the difficulty that he is causing, not simply to cause him to be over the Isur. Because you see that this person doesn't care about Isurim because he's doing it by Mezid. And so that's not what is plaguing him, and what he wants to do is tell this person that he did something that caused him irreparable damage. And that's why he's going to, for sure, notify the other party about it. Yochanan Amar, Dvar Torah, Echad Shogeg, V'chad Mezid Patur. When it comes to Hezek, She'enu Nikar, Mai Taimach, Hezek She'enu Nikar, Lo Shme Hezek. When it comes to damage that's not discernible, then you are Patur Min HaTorah. The Torah is not Mechayev in that case. Matam Amru B'Mezid Chayav. Now this will be the Tikkun Olam. Why by Mezid are you chayav? Because otherwise it's too big a temptation. Again, if you want to cause problems, difficulties for another party, you want to take revenge on another party, this would be the easiest way to do it. You'd go to be mitamei, their objects. You'll wave at them and say, I'm patur, I don't have to pay anything for it. And I left you in a very bad position. So in order to prevent people from taking this route, we put in a penalty which says that if you do it, we are going to make you culpable, we are going to make you chayav, in order to stop people from using this as a vehicle to take revenge on other parties or to hurt other parties. And even though by Groma ben Zikin, an individual is patur, so why don't we say the same thing over here by Hezek Sheinu Nikar? If it's something the Torah didn't make you culpable for, why is it that you are imposing here to stop them from doing this? Do the same thing by Grama. So what the Tosafot reads says over here, Perish, Afagav delo shmei hezek, gadolhu mi grama de nizikin. It's greater or more problematic than grama in nizikin. Afilamandamar grama ben nizikin patur. Because even the one who says that generally, grama in nizikin is patur. Hocha mi chayev. Over here will make you chayav. Mipnei she'oseh ma'aseh b'yadayim. Because here you're actively doing the damage, even though the damage is not discernible. Aval b'groma lekem ma'aseh b'yadayim. When it's groma, you don't actively do the problem, you just happen to cause it, maybe unintentionally, maybe intentionally, but it's only causation. And that's why we're going to be more lenient by groma b'nizikin than we will be by hezek she'enu nikar. Now, how to view hezek she'enu nikar in general might relate to whether there's an isur in causing nezek to another party. That's something we'll discuss when we get to Baba Kama, but is there a isur min haTorah to cause damage to another party? Or is it simply, if you do cause damage, you have to make compensation or restitution for the damage that you did? If you believe that it's a sur to do hezek to another party, that might either be the opinion of why hezek she'enu nikar is shmei hezek, or even according to one that says lo shmei hezek, all he's saying is it's a sur to do the hezek, but just can't demand restitution or repayment because it's enu nikar. On the other hand, if you think that there's no isur in doing hezek, and hezek is simply restitution or compensation, then they're really arguing about whether hezek she'enu nikar is called damage, and therefore you have to compensate for it or don't compensate for it. Obviously, the opinion which we possibly like that it is, eino shmei hezek, is then more difficult to understand. You definitely are causing a monetary loss to this individual, so why shouldn't you be held accountable, or why shouldn't you have to make restitution for it? What you have to say is, that's the gzeret ha-katuv, that only discernible damage is one chayav for making compensation on. Again, if there's an isur in doing nezek, then you can say that the person violated an isur, even though we can't force you to make restitution for that damage. Tznan. Tznan is a Mishnah upcoming. It's a question as to whether the Gemara, first of all, is quoting the Mishnah or is quoting a Braita. Number two is a question about what the Girsa is in that Mishnah upcoming. Tosafot over here concludes that the Mishnah's Girsa upcoming is what we find here, which is a Kohanim. Shepiglu b'migdash mezidim chayavin. Kohanim that caused pigul in the Migdash on purpose, intentionally, are chayav. Ve'tani Allah mipnei tikkun olam. And the reason for that is tikkun olam. Now, the tikkun olam seems to be referencing the entirety of the Mishnah, which is HaKohanim Shepiglu b'Migdash mezidim chayavin. And we say about that tikkun olam, that tikkun olam references both that Mishnah and our Mishnah as well. The only thing is, in that Mishnah, the focus of the tikkun olam is on the chayav aspect. Kohanim that are mifagel, kohanim who have an improper machshava or thought with regards to eating this korban or doing any of the avodah of the kadam chutz lizmanam outside of their time, makes the korban into pigul, and it's no longer a valid korban, as well as the fact that they can't eat the korban. So the Gemara in Pesachim tells us that they penalize the Kohanim, that if they came to contact with Pigol, it would make them Tamei, because that is a serious penalty for a Kohanim, both from the fact that they'd be precluded from Avodah, but more importantly, they couldn't eat Truma. And if their mainstay of sustenance is Truma, if you make them Tamei, then you're really affecting them. So in order to penalize the Kohanim, they made them Tamei when they came into contact with these objects. That's number one. Number two is, they said that they have to make compensation, restitution to the party they hurt, which is the person who brought his korban, is now out of korban. It's not good, and he has to bring another one. If he's chayav, he'll have to bring another one. If it was a neder nedava, technically he may not have to bring another one, but still he has pangs in his heart that he didn't bring the nedava that he wanted. And so therefore we demand that the kohen make payment, compensation to him for ruining the korban. Now, that Mishnah that says, mezidim chayavin, on that we said tikkun olam. It makes it sound like the tikkun olam has nothing to do with the shogeg patur, but to do with the mezid chayav. And that's what the Gemara's question over here is. V'tani olam mipnei tikkun olam, v'yamar tezek she'enu nikar shmei hezek, if you hold like Chizkiya that it is, hezek, hai shogegim turim, mipnei tikkun olam mibayilei. The Mishnah should have concluded that mezidim chayavim, shogegim turim mipnei tikkun olam. The tikkun olam should have modified or qualified the Shogegin in the Mishnah, not the Mezidim Chayavin. If it qualifies the Mezidim Chayavin, that sounds like Rabbi Yochanan, that is the Tikkun Olam. Achanami Kamar, that's exactly what the Mishnah means. Mezidim Chayavim, the Mishnah explicitly states that if you do it b'mezid you're Chayav, the implicit outcome of that is Shogegim Turim, And on that implicit statement, mipnei tikkun olam. That is the tikkun olam. And so the tikkun olam is modifying the diuk out of the Mishnah, not the explicit statement in the Mishnah. So that's how Chizkiyah gets out of that problem, or that question on him. Meitiv Rabbi Elazar. The Elazar now challenges from this. Hosem alacha b'mei chatat, uparat chatat patur midinei adam, v'chayav bidinei shamayim. Person who does work with the mechatat, which is the waters mixed with the ashes of the paraduma that are used to be mitahir someone, or with the parat chatat, the paraduma, if he does work with it, he ruins it, is posel these items from being utilized anymore, patur midinei adam. In terms of going to a court here or being held accountable here by a judiciary, he won't be. On the other hand, midinei shamayim, min shamayim, they're going to punish him. Rashi says over here, min shamayim means puranut v'shalem the rishayim. These are difficulties or punishments that will come on the rishayim. Shenitkaven lafsid et Yisrael, because his intent was to cause losses or damage to Israel. So Hashem takes care of that. That's on Hashem's cheshbon, not on the cheshbon or something that we can deal with, midinei adam. Now, the reason that this is problematic when you do malacha, with regards to the parah aduma, it's explicit. The pasukim say, asher lo ala aleha ol. It's an animal that never had a yoke put on it, meaning that work was never done with it. So with regards to the working of the parah chatat, that is posel, the parah aduma. With regards to the mei chatat, it says, lemishmeret lemei nida, that they should be guarded to be used mei nida. Mei nida means to be used for waters of purification. The mishmeret, the Gemara learns from that, mishumarot. They have to be guarded to be used specifically for this purpose and no other purpose. And that means if you do melacha or work with it, then you have been posel the mei chatat. So in both of these cases, this is your classic case of hezek she'enu nikar. In terms of the animal before and after you do the work, the waters before and after you do the work, they look identical, exactly the same. Nevertheless, beforehand, they were usable. Afterwards, they are pasul. So you did hezek she'enu nikar. And the Braita says explicitly that you are chayav bidinei shemayim, but you are patur bidinei adam. That sounds like Rabbi Yochanan, not like Chizkiyah. V'yamar hezek she'enu nikar shmei hezek, like Chizkiyah bidinei adam nami lechayev. Then you should also be chayav bidinei adam. He asked the question, presented the question, and answered the question. Para, the case of para is shechnisa l'ravka amanat shetinok v'tidosh. He brings it into its pen or its corral in order to nurse something that is normal activity of a para, but also tidosh, for it also to thresh at the same time. So when he brings it in terms of the action that he's taking, the action that he's taking is perfectly mutar, because entering the animal into this location is simply for it to feed or to it to nurse, which is permissible. On the other hand, the tidosh aspect of it, to thresh, that is not allowed. But that has to do with his makshava, with his thought when he brings it in. So through his makshava, through his thought, he can be posel the para aduma, even though he's taking no action whatsoever. The reason that he's patur midinei adam over here and only chayav bidei shamayim, because this is not your classic hezek she'enu nikar. But hezek she'enu nikar, you do something active, and then there's no discernible difference in the object. But here, you're not even taking an action that is problematic. Your action is perfectly mutar. What ruins it or makes it problematic is the thought that you had when you took that action, which is not only do you want it to nurse, but you also want it to thresh. And because of that, you'll be held accountable, be dinei shamayim. Right, yeah. It's true. He could admit to it, but you're right, that the only one who's going to know that the machshava was this way is Hashem. It's going to posel it, and because of that, you'll be held accountable, be dinei shamayim, and not be dinei adam. Mechatat, in case of mechatat, is shakel behen mishkolot, is where he uses it as a weight, or a counterbalance for weights. So he's weighing something against the mechatat. He's not using the mechatat themselves. He's just using the weight of the mechatat to measure against something else. We'll see more detail about that in 1 second. Now, Tosafot over here speaks about the issue of how you, by doing avoda with someone else's animal, can be oser their animal. And that's a general question that you have to ask. which is how are you affecting other people's property? It also came up with minasech. If you do libations with someone else's wine, why does it become asur if it's not yours? So there are two ways to deal with that with regards to minasech. One is to say that he's a shutaf. He's a partner in this object. And you could say the same thing here by the para, which is that he might be a partner there. If he's a partner, then he has enough ownership to create a problem because of his partnership interest in the object. The other way to deal with it is that by the case of takrovet avodah zarah, that's something that is so chamur, this individual through a maisa can affect someone else's property. Now with regards to the para duma, if it's someone else's property, how does your working it affect it? So the Gemara actually has a drosha with regards to a para duma. The requirement of a para duma is that you do not work it. But the way that it's expressed is, like you write, lo ubad ba or lo avad ba. Right? Ubad would mean that there was work done to it, whereas avad means you actively did work with the animal. The Gemara here makes a drosha similar to, we've seen it by Itain Yutan, which is that in the end, if it's done passively, it still causes a problem if the Baalim want it, if the owners want something like that to happen. So even though you didn't actively do it, but if the Baalim are happy with what is done, that's the equivalent of actively doing it. And so there too, by the para duma, if someone else does it and the Baalim are happy, that is enough reason to create the problem of Odah. But then you ask, why would anybody be happy? This is a very interesting question in Tosafot. He doesn't mention it here. The Tosafot in Baba Kama asks this question. It turns out to have a major nafkamina in Halacha Lemaaseh, which is Tosafot over there. It says that if you take a para duma to mate, and therefore you mount an animal on the para duma for it to mate. So now, when other animals mounting on it to mate, if the Baalim are happy with that, probably makes sense that they'd be happy with that because it's going to have children have more parot adumot. On the other hand, if he wants this to happen, then it's going to become pasul for being a parah adumah. So by definition, it should be lo nechale. He shouldn't want it because if this activity goes through, he's going to lose his parah adumah and it'll be worthless. So even though in one sense he wants the mating, on the other sense, he knows if the mating happens, it's going to lose all of his money. So do we consider it to be nechale or no nechale? Does he approve or does he not approve? Tosafot over there says that any reason where it's lo nechale because of the halachic ramifications, that's not called lo nechale. Nechale and lo nechale have to simply do with the activity at hand, not the halachic implications of the activity. So over here, he wants the mating to take place, even though the halachic implications of it, that he will lose his paraduma. We don't consider that to be lo nechale because it's only a result of the halacha that makes it lo nechale. But Shlomo Zalman Orbach, in a tshuva about Shabbat, mentions that Tosafot in Baba Kama to explain why. When a person opens up a refrigerator on Shabbat and the light goes on. So you could say that the person, lo nechale, he doesn't want the light to go on, because if the light goes on, then he can't open the fridge on Shabbat. So he has no interest in that light going on. Even if it's a psik reisha, it should at least be a psik reisha delo nechale, that it's something that he doesn't want. So opening up the fridge on Shabbat should then at least drop down maybe to a darabonon level, or it could give you other dispensations if you say that it's a psik reisha delo nechale, which according to some it is even mutar. So why don't we invoke that principle with regards to opening up the fridge? He quotes this Tosafot and says, the halachic restriction cannot be the reason to lo nechale. You, on a weekday, would open up the fridge and want the light to go on, because then you could see inside the refrigerator. You would have no objection to the light going on during the week. Why do you object to the light going on Shabbat? Because of the halacha that you can't have the light go on Shabbat. That's not considered to be lo nechale, because again, of this Tosafot by Parah Adumah. When it's the halacha that makes it lo nechale, that's not called lo nechale. Lo nechale has to live independently of the halachic restriction or outcome. Just like by the para duma, absent the halacha of the fact that this would posel the para duma, you would want this. That is called nechale, even though it would be lo nechale just because of the monetary impact or the loss of the para duma. That's called nechale. And similarly by Shabbat, by the refrigerator, even though it's lo nechale when he turns on the light, but in any other circumstance besides Shabbat, it would be nechale. And that makes it nechale on Shabbat as well, because the halachic ramification can't make it lo nechale. Anyway, it's just an interesting halacha lemaaseh that comes out of this brayta here with regards to a para aduma. Right now, the Gemara says, Vama Rava, don't we have a memra from Rava, Mechatat, Shishakal ben Mishkalot Ksheira? Mechatat that is used too as a counterweight or as a weight is Ksheira and does not ruin the Mechatat. So now you just explained the brayta saying Mechatat is ruined when you weigh with it. And now we have Rava saying that it's not a problem at all. Lokasha. Ha begufan, ha bekenegdan. It makes a difference between whether you do it with themselves or you do it in an opposition. The way Rashi explains this is that there are two ways to weigh something or to determine the volume of something. One is to put them on a scale and to have one object on one side, the other object on the other side, and that's how you get the weight of the object. So this is the case of kenegdan, according to Rashi. You put the meat on one side, you put the mechatat on the other side, you weigh them, and then you figure out how much the meat weighs. So that's called kenegdan. Because there you didn't do any maise with the mechatat itself. You simply used it as a counterbalance on the other side. In that case, it'll be ksheira. On the other hand, there's another way to do it, which is called displacement. Rashi says over here, if you take a utensil that is full of water, and along the walls of the utensil you have marks that tell you how much or what volume has been put in there. So you stick the object, the meat, into this water, and when you stick it into the water, it displaces the water up to those levels, and then you can tell what the volume is or what the object is. Rashi claims that bigufan over here is a case where you use that displacement method. So that when notim basar b'mayim, ad shamayim olim derosh shem hasheni, and that's how you figure out the weight or the volume of the object that you have over here. And that's what you mean, to use them physically. Then you actually use them. Again, the mechatat are not changed by that, but you utilize them in order to measure some object or to determine the volume of some object. That's the way that Rashi explains it. Many of the Rishonim follow the Rabbeinu Chananel, who says that the case of Gufan is what Rashi calls Kenegdan, which is that Gufan means that you use it as a counterweight on the scale. That's called using them Bigufan, because they are the object on the other side of the scale. Kenegdan is when you happen to know what the weight of this Mechatat is. You weighed it against a stone in the past. But you didn't weigh it in the past. You were just having fun. You put them on the scale and you had a weight on one side and then you figured out that that was the weight of the Mechatat. Later on, then you go to measure something and now you need the actual weight. So you take the stone that you weighed against the Mechatat and you put it opposite the other object and now you're weighing it. So indirectly, the Mechatat set for you the weight of that stone, and that stone is now being used to measure the basar on the other side of the scale. And that'll be kenegdan, according to the Rabbeinu Chananel. So now, what we're suggesting here is, in one of those instances, begufan, it would be posel the mechatat. In the case of kenegdan, it would not be posel the mechatat, then that would be the memra of Rova. Now the Gemara says, begufan, maseka avid behu. When you do a begufan, you're doing a physical action with them. And then again, we're back to the problem again, which is, vihezek shenu nikar shmehezek, bidin adam nami lechayev. You're back to the original problem, which is when you have a maseh, then hezek sheinu nikar should cause you to be chayab. Unlike the parat chatat, we solve the problem by having a machshava. So a machshava is not a maseh. So that solved the problem. Over here, you're still dealing with an action or activity by the individual by doing a begufan. Ela idi v'idi b'kenegdan. Both the bright and rover are talking about a case where it's kenegdan. According to Rashi, means that it's on the opposite side of the scale. According to Rabbeinu Chananel, it means that you weighed something else with it, and then you use that counterweight to weigh a third object. Lokasha, ad asak date, ad lo asak date. So now we move it into the realm of machshava, which is that he stopped thinking about it. Hesech hadat. There's a requirement because the pasuk says, l'mishmeret l'meinida. Mishmeret means that you always have to have in mind. You have to be focused on the object to protect it and take care of it. If you, for whatever reason, stop thinking about it, you are mesiach dat from it, that makes it pasul. So even though you did nothing active, but the fact that you stopped watching it, or you forgot about it, that it was there, that makes it pasul. And that pasul is something that is not a maseh, and therefore it's not going to be subject to hezek sheinu nikar, and that's why the Braita tells us that you are patur midinei adam, but b'chayav v'dinei shamayim. So in one case where he is not asach date, that's Rava's case, that's why over there it remains ksheira. In the case of the Braita, he was Mesiach Dat, and that's why it's Pasul, and that's why you would be accountable B'dinei Shemayim, but not B'dinei Adam. Tosafot then asks, how do you explain the Braita itself? The Lashon of Braita is that a Parat Chatat, or Mei Chatat, that he did Malocha with them. Now, with regards to the Parat Chatat, we'd explain the Malocha because he had in mind that it should thresh. But over here, there's no Malocha. The problem was that you were Mesiach Dat. You just forgot about it. Tosfot in the end says that the word malacha could only be modifying the para in that case and not modifying the mechatat. Mechatat is brought along the parat chatat because they have the same din. But the word malacha is only modifying the parat chatat in that case. Meitiv Rav Papa. So Rav Papa now challenges this issue of Hezek Sheinu Nikar. He says, Gazal Matbea, he stole a coin, Vinifsal. And then the government took it out of circulation. Says the currency is no good anymore. Truma vinitmeit. He steals truma, and then the truma becomes tmeya. Chametz, he steals chametz. Varvar lava pesach. And then the chametz goes past pesach, and we know chametz varvar lava pesach is asur. All these items now are, we call, useless and valueless. So in all these cases, you have a soul that renders the object valueless. But the object is still here and is still intact. So now the Braita here says, you can say to him, Harei Shalcha Lefanecha. You hand it back to the owner of the object and say, here's your object back. He did Veshivet Egzela Asher Gazal. He stole an object. He returned the object. Again, there's no discernible difference in the object. The object looks exactly the same as when he stole it. So he gives it back. The only thing is, in that interim period, something happened that ruined the object. Whether it's chametz that went over Pesach, the currency is no longer valid currency, the truma is now tmeah, but it just hands it back to him. The return of Gezel, Veshivet Gzela Asher Gazal, has two options in there. Veshivet Gzela Asher Gazal is that if you stole an object and you can return the object itself, we demand that you return the object, but it also gives you the advantage that as long as you return the object, it doesn't matter what's happened to the value of the object, because you're returning the same object, and you say, Harei Shalcha Lefanecha. On the other hand, if the object changes in any way, or there's hezek done to the object, then we no longer say Veshivet Gzela, literally the Gzela, but rather Et Gzela, the value of the Gzela that you have to return. And that's what's being discussed over here. The one exception is Takanat Merish, which is the Chachamim said that if a person built something into his home or use a stolen object, even though it's intact, to have him return it would be so difficult and cause him to destroy his whole house to get the beam out that he stole. Then we tell him pay the compensation, the value, and don't return the object because we want to encourage the person to do tshuva and to return the gzela. If we tell him he's got to take his house down, there's a very low likelihood that he's actually going to return the beam. But if we tell him he can return the value of the beam, he's much more likely to do it. So there are exceptions to that rule. It's called Takanat Meirish, which we'll see in the Gemara and Baba Kama, which allows the Gazlan to pay instead of giving back the object. But in cases where the object is intact, then Meshivat Gzela Asher Gazal is the primary way to rectify the Gzela and is the avenue that is open to this individual. That's for good and for bad. If the object went up in value or he did something with the object, he still has to return it. On the other hand, something happens that ruins the object, as long as it's not something that visibly changes the object, then you can go, Harei Shalcha Lefanecha, this is yours, and take it back. So now the Gemara wants to ask from this, V'yamart, Hezek Sheinu Nikar Shmei Hezek. If you say that Hezek Sheinu Nikar is called Hezek, like Chizkiah, Hai Gazlan, who? This guy is a full-fledged Gazlan, Mimona Malia Bayil Shlume. Then he has to pay. You should have to make regular compensation. He can't return the object, because he now is ruined the object, and in ruining the object and doing hezek to the object, he's konan the object. And be konan the object, you can't return the object anymore. You have to make compensation. You have to return the value of the object. If that's the case, tiyufta, that is a strong refutation of the position of Chizkiah. Now to your question, which Tosafot raises, he says, what is the Gemara doing over here? These cases are not comparable whatsoever. We just said that Hezek Sheinu Nikar is something that you do Maseh B'Yadayim. It's something where you do it actively. So when you actively do it, we say Hezek Sheinu Nikar, Shmei Hezek, according to Chizkiah. Over here, you're talking about passive psul. Talking about here, he did nothing. The government took the coin out of circulation. He didn't do anything to ruin the coin. The chametz, he didn't do anything to ruin the chametz, it simply was around on Pesach, and that made it problematic. Chametz shebaal Pesach. The truma became tmeah. He wasn't mitameh the truma, it became tmeah. Tosafot says over here, how can you compare these two cases? How is this even a question on Chizkiah? It's a totally different case. So Tosafot says, v'yesh lomar, that the way to resolve this is to say, kevin de hezek shenu yikar shmei hezek, if you believe like Chizkiah that indiscernible hezek is called hezek, imkein chashiv le ki'ilu hu nikar, then it's as if it is visible. V'imkein ein lecha shinui gadol mizeh. Because if you believe that indiscernible hezek is hezek, then it becomes like hezek nikar, as if damage that can be seen. Now, if someone steals an object and then changes the object, he can no longer return that object because he's made changes to the object. So he cannot be mikayim v'yishivet gzela asher gazal. So what he has to do is make compensation. He has to pay the value of the object at the time that he stole it or took possession of it. So what Tosafot says is the same thing over here. If you believe Hezek Sheinu Nikar is called Hezek, then over here, when the Hezek happened, you're right, you didn't do it. You're right that it wasn't done by your Yodayim. Nevertheless, something changed about this object because there's now a discernible, quote-unquote, Hezek that's been done. That's because you deem indiscernible Hezek like discernible Hezek. And that means that there's a change in the object. A change in the object automatically makes it that you're koneh the object, and you now are chayav to return the value, not the object itself. And that's what he says here, in the chashinui gadol mizeh, v'kanama gazlan b'shinui, the gazlan is acquiring them through shinui, v'tzarich l'shalem b'mamon ma'alyo. Then he has to return the value, v'shamin ke'in shegazal. And you take the assessment at the amount, or as if what he had stolen, he can no longer say, this is yours. So just like here, if he stole a coin and got cut in half, he can't return the two halves of the coin because there was a shinui here. So too, when the coin is taken out of circulation by the government, even though it's not a visible hezek, but if you think that indiscernible hezek is like discernible hezek, it's the equivalent of having something happen to the coin as if it was split in half. And therefore, since you can't return the coin, you have to make compensation. That's why Tosafot says these two cases are comparable. That's why the Gemara asks from this case on Chizkiah. Then, why does the Gemara here say that it's a tiyufta? It's a strong refutation of Chizkiah's position. Because the Gemara is about to say Tanayehi. It's a machloket Tanayim. Well, if it's a machloket Tanayim, then it's not a tiyufta on Chizkiah. Because Chizkiah can just hold like the other Tano. So what Tosafot says is, Afgav demaiti achreikein Tanayehi, Kamar tiyufta mishum tekein halacha, lo shmei hezek. Says because the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan, and therefore the Gemara says that it's a tiyufta on Chizkiah because in the end the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan, despite the fact that we find Tanaim that do argue, or possibly argue along these lines. It doesn't read over here, implicitly asks the question, why don't we penalize this individual midrabanan? Just like we do it by mazik, where hezek sheinu nikar, we penalize them midrabanan. Why don't we do the same thing here by the gazlan? And he says, dafka gabi mazik, kansu chachamim b'mezid. That it's only in the case of mazik that they did this. Aval gabi gazlan lo kansu. But by gazlan they were not kunes. V'adarabah harbei takanot asu chachamim legazlan. That is because, as we mentioned before, the chachamim instituted many things to protect or to help the gazlan. Kedei sheyaseh tshuva, in order to facilitate his ability to do tshuva. And therefore also over here, they did not penalize him to make him chayav in order to facilitate his ability to do tshuva. Now the Gemara says, Lema kitanei. Let us say that this issue of hezek sheinu nikar is a machloga tanaim. Hamitamei v'amidameya v'minaseich echad shogeg v'echad mezid chayav divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says you are chayav across the board. Mezid shogeg, chayav across the board. As Rashi notes over here, by Adama Mazik, we make no distinctions between Mezid and Shogeg. And therefore, if you believe that Hezek Sheinu Nikar Shmei Hezek, then Adama Mazik is going to be culpable both for Mezid and Shogeg. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, B'Shogeg Patur, B'Mezid Chayav. By Shogeg is Patur, by Mezid is Chayav. The fact that he distinguishes between Shogeg and Mezid already shows you that he doesn't think that Hezek Sheinu Nikar Shmei Hezek, otherwise he should have been Chayav in both instances. So what do you want to say? My love, Bahakam Iflige, this is their machloket. Demar Saver Hezek Sheinu Nikar Shmei Hezek, that's Rabbi Meir. He holds that it's Shmei Hezek, that's why you're chayav to Shogeg and Mezid. And Rabbi Yehuda thinks that it's not Shmei Hezek, and the reason you're Chayav B'Mezid is because of the Tikkun Olam. So then everybody goes around damaging their friend's property. So for that reason, you'd be Mezid, you would make you Chayav. Amar Rav Nachum Yitzchak, no, the Kuli Alma, Hezek Sheinu Ikar, Lo Shmei Hezek. Everybody agrees that Hezek Sheinu Ikar is not called Hezek. V'hocha B'Knaso Shogeg Atu Mezid Kamiflegei. The machloket is about whether when we impose a knas, do we only impose the knas in cases where it's intentional by mezid, or do we also impose the knas on shogeg? The truth is that the Gemara could have answered just the opposite, which is the Gemara said, Kuli Alma, Hezek, Sheinu Nikar, Shmei Hezek. And then explained the Mishnah based on that, saying Rabbi Meir holds Shmei Hezek, and that's why you're Chayav. Rabbi Yehuda holds Shmei Hezek, but because of Tikkun Olam, he wanted you to be patur by shogeg, Kadei Shiodiu, in order that they would explain it. So the Gemara could have gone in either direction. The reason the Gemara picks this direction is for the same reason as we mentioned before. The halacha is that lo shmei hezek. So the Gemara wants to set up the Mishnah or the Braita in a manner that is aliba de hilchata. And that's why the Gemara says, kuli alma hezek sheinu nikar lo shmei hezek. And the machloket here is about whether we're kones shogeg atu mezid. Mars of our konsu shogeg atu mezid. Rabbi Meir holds that when we penalize you by the mezid, we also penalize you by the shogeg. Marsavar lo kansu shogeg atu mezid. And Rabbi Yehuda says, we penalize you by the mezid, but not by the shogeg. Mar says, virami de Rabbi Meir adi Rabbi Meir, virami de Rabbi Yehuda adi Rabbi Yehuda. That's the case. We have a stira within the position of Rabbi Meir, and a stira within the position of Rabbi Yehuda. Because over here, in the braita that we bought with regards to Hezek Sheinu Nikar, we see Rabbi Meir says, yes, Rakone Shoneg Atu Mezid, and Rabbi Yehuda says, no. Yet we have a different braita, the Tanya, which we've seen before. Hamivashel b'Shabbat b'Shogeg. Person who cooks on Shabbat, b'Shogeg, unintentionally, Yochal, he may eat it. Now over here, the Girsa is likely Yochal. That's based on what Rashi and Tosfot over here say, that this statement of Rabbi Meir is about the individual who did the cooking himself. That means b'shogeg yuchal. He himself can eat it when he does it b'shogeg, even on Shabbat. B'mezid, if he does it intentionally, lo yuchal. He may not eat it, and that means that on Shabbat he may not eat it, he himself, but he can eat it on Motzei Shabbat. Other people could eat it right away. That is the shita of Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir's shita is number one, by shogeg, the individual can eat it. There's no penalty whatsoever by shogeg. By mezid, we penalize the individual who did the cooking. Therefore, he may not eat it until Motzei Shabbat, whereas other people can eat it right away because they were not parties to the isur that was done here. So we penalize the individual himself. We do not penalize other parties. And as Rashi notes over here, when we say the Motzei Shabbat, it means l'achar shimtim kedei shi'asu. There has to be enough time that you could actually do it. I mean, you can't get hanah from the melacha that was done on Shabbat. He has to wait sufficient time on Motzei Shabbat that he could have done it on Motzei Shabbat. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, b'shogeg yuchal the Motzei Shabbat. B'shogeg you eat it, the Motzei Shabbat means he himself can eat it, the Motzei Shabbat. B'mezid lo yuchal olamit. B'mezid he may not eat it forever. So again here, we're going to suggest, according to Rashi and Tosafot, that we're talking about the individual himself. So, but b'shogeg yuchal the Motzei Shabbat. B'shogeg, the individual himself can eat it on Motzei Shabbat again, b'kdei shi'asu, after the amount of time it would take to cook on Motzei Shabbat. The individual himself could eat it after Shabbat. Other people, acherim, could eat it right away. B'mezid, on the other hand, when he does it b'mezid, the penalty is that he can't eat it forever. Acherim, others could eat it on Motzei Shabbat. How do I know all of these missing pieces in the braita? Tosafot gives you a principle that is, that each shita afterwards is one level higher. So that the mezid of Rabbi Meir is equivalent to the shogeg of Rabbi Yehuda. And the mezid of Rabbi Yehuda is equivalent to the shogeg of Rabbi Yochanan Sandar, which we'll see is the third opinion in 1 second. So that's how I know that there are these differences. Rabbi Yochanan Sandar Omer, b'shogeg ye'achel le'motzei Shabbat, the shogeg can be eaten on Motzei Shabbat, la'acherim velo lo, for others and not him. Now if you conform that to the mezid of Rabbi Yehuda, that tells you when Rabbi Yehuda says that you're not allowed to eat it olamit, forever, that's only for the person himself who did the melacha. For others, you could eat it on Motzei Shabbat, again, Begdei Shiyasu. Ve-mezid, if he does it intentionally, lo ya'achel olamit, he may never eat it forever, lo-lo, lo achevim. Not him, not others. The reason being that Rabbi Yochanan HaSalar believes that the Masei Shabbat ne'esru, as opposed to Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, who say that a melocha that is done on Shabbat has no impact on the object itself. The object itself is just that, an object. The Masei is what is osur. What's also here is that you did something wrong and you're going to be held accountable for it. Then Chazal penalized individuals who do this because they don't want them doing it. And that's why you can't eat it, whether it's today or you can't eat it forever, because that's a penalty for doing the wrong thing. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan Sandar believes that Maaseh Shabbat, when you do an action on Shabbat, it impacts the chayfetz, the object itself. The object itself becomes an object of Isur. So here, in this case, where he does a malach on Shabbat, the object itself becomes an object of Isur, and that's why you can't eat it and no one else can eat it. Because it's done forever. The object is Isur now. Bin Nafkamina, for instance, if these meat got mixed up with other objects. According to Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, when the meat gets mixed up with other objects, it's not going to make a tarovet of Isur. Because the meat itself is mutar. It's just that you're not allowed to eat the meat. Or someone else is not allowed to eat the meat. Whereas for Rabbi Yochanan Sandar, the meat itself is Asur. And if it got mixed up with other meats, it would be a tarovet of Isur. And that's why there's a difference in the pronunciation of the Braita, that under Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, we say lo yochal, because it's referencing the individual themselves, whereas for Rabbi Yochanan Sandar, we say lo yeachel, because it's affecting the chayfetz, the object itself. But that's here, you see, again, machlok between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. So now, Rabbi Meir says, mezid, we penalize him, shogeg, we don't penalize him. Rabbi Yehuda says, we penalize him both by mezid and by shogeg. That's the opposite of their opinions above. That's why it says, kasha the Rabbi Meir, the Rabbi Meir, kasha the Rabbi Yehuda, the Rabbi Yehuda. The Rabbi Meir, the Rabbi Meir lo kasha, that's not a question. Ki kanis, when did he put in a penalty? Bidrabanan. That's only when there's an Isur Drabanan. That's the case of Hezek Sheinu Nikar. By the case of Hezek Nikar, that's lo shme Hezek, the Chamim imposed the penalty. So then, to reinforce the din derabanan, he says you get a penalty both by mezid and by shogeg. We're going to penalize you. Bidoraita over here when bevashel b'shabbat, which is a din doraita, there is not kones because people are bedilei minei. People don't do isurim doraita. You don't have to put in extra penalties to stop people doing isurim doraita, especially b'shogeg. The mezid we won't penalize. If he did it intentionally, we're going to penalize him. But if he does it unintentionally, you don't need to penalize him in that case. Now, this distinction that he makes is not so simple because some of the examples that we had previously in Hezek Sheinu Ikar are Doraita. Minaseich, according to Rav, is a din Doraita, which is that you're doing Nisach Hayayin makes it a sur midoraita. Ah, Minaseich Doraita, who? So what about the fact that Minaseich is Doraita, who? The Kakonis, and over there we are Kones, Bishogeg also. Because of the stringency of Avodah Zarah, we are Konesim. So in the end, that's what you could argue, that when that the Nisuch HaYayin is Midoraita. So here the Gemara only addresses Aminaseich. But Amitamei, Amidameya, also seemingly are problematic Midoraita. Midameya, or Mitamei, these are things that ruin the objects Midoraita. So why is it that Rabbi Meir over here calls those all midrabanan? So either you have to say that there's a difference between when the Isur itself is deoraita versus the outcome being deoraita. Over here, the person who did it was mivashel, did something that was asur deoraita. In the other cases, by the midameya mitamei, you didn't necessarily do something wrong min a Torah. The totsa'ah, the outcome, the result of your action is a Torah prescribed outcome. So that's the reason maybe over there it's different. It's not called Doraita, it's called Derabanan, because what you did was not inherently Asur. The outcome creates Isur or ruins it. Now even though in some of these cases you could argue even that Doraita, it is Asur, there you can say it's only a Isur Aseh, not an Isur Lav. And you could also argue that we're talking about Tumah Midrabanan, Trumah Midrabanan, being Mitamei Chulin, where there is no Isur, or that Midoraita, Midameyach, Truma is Batel Berov. And over here we require 100 to 1, so the Dimua is only a Dinder Abonan.
So there are many ways to make this into a case of Dirabbanan, and that's why these things are subject to a knas, and those that are d'oraita are not subject to a knas. So Rabbi Yehuda lo kasha, Rabbi Yehuda is not a question, ki lo kanis b'dirabbanan. There's no knas. By things that are d'rabbanan, they only penalize the mezid, not the shogeg. B'doraita, which is a much more severe violation, kanis. Then they did put in a knas. Va minaseich d'oraita. What about the fact that minaseich is d'oraita, v'lo kanis? And there they're not kanis. Mishom kumra davarot kavim mivdal b'dilei minei. The exact opposite of Rabbi Meir. Because it's so severe and such a grave avera, people stay away from it. Bishul v'Shabbat, people take light more lightly. But Avodah Zarah, which is a central tenet of our faith, there people stay away from it, and you don't have to be kones shogeg al tumezid in cases like that of Avodah Zarah. Gemara says, Rami, the Rabbi Meir, the Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Doraita. Even on a Torah level, we have a stira within Rabbi Meir. Rashi notes over here that the question should have been equally a question on Rabbi Yehuda as it is on Rabbi Meir. Because the next Mishnah is a machloket Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. And we should have the same question on Rabbi Yehuda. And Rashi says that they just brought Rabbi Meir because Rabbi Meir was the first one, is the Tanakhama. And since he's mentioned explicitly as the Tanakhama, they just say, oh, Rabbi Meir, but the truth is the question's on Rabbi Yehuda, to Rabbi Yehuda as well. And the answer will be similar for Rabbi Yehuda as we give for Rabbi Meir. Others, the Ramban explains, Enochanami, that Rabbi Yehuda is not a question, because we've seen Rabbi Yehuda make distinctions between different items, and here too he'll make a distinction which we'll explain. But he thinks that Bedile Mine, Rabbi Yehuda makes an exception for the rule at the Oraita. So too over here you can make the same statement. But Rabbi Meir, we don't find that. So now we need to figure out how to resolve this Braita. The Tanya. Hanoteya b'Shabbat b'Shogeg. Someone who plants on Shabbat b'Shogeg, yikayim. You can keep that sapling, you can let it grow. B'mezid, if he plants intentionally, yeyaker. You have to uproot it because of that penalty. B'shvi'it, if he plants on Shvi'it, ben b'Shogeg, ben b'mezid, yeyaker. Whether it's intentional or unintentional, you have to uproot it. Divrei Rabbi Meir. This is a sheet of Rabbi Meir. Now, Rabbi Meir just told us before that when it comes to dinim d'oraita, we do not penalize shogeg to mezid. Yet here, by shvi'it, you see him penalizing both shogeg and mezid, and you have to uproot it. Rabbi Meir, b'shvi'it, b'shogeg yikayim. B'shogeg, you can keep it. B'mezid, ya'aker. B'mezid, you have to undermine it. U'b'shabbat, ben b'shogeg, ben b'mezid, ya'aker. By Shabbat, whether it's Shogeg or Mezid, you have to uproot it. That is consistent with Rabbi Yehuda's Shita before, which is that in Meshelba Shabbat, we penalize Shogeg to Mezid. So that's consistent with regards to Shabbat. But by Shvi'it, which is also Doraita over there, he says, B'Shogeg Yikayim. What you have to say is that we've seen Rabbi Yehuda distinguish within Doraita. We saw before by the Nisuch HaYayin that Rabbi Yehuda said, because B'Dile Minei, therefore, we don't kone shogeg atumezid. So the same thing over here, you could argue with the Shvi'it, whether it's bedile mine or whether there's something unique about Shvi'it, he makes distinctions within the oraita level objects. And that's why the Ramban says that this is not a question on Rabbi Yehuda. The Baal Yitosafot think it is a question on Rabbi Yehuda, and he'll answer the same way that Rabbi Meir answers here. Where it says, L'tameich tikshalech hi gufa. Why are you asking a question from Braita to Braita? Internally, in this Braita, there's a stira. Rabbi Meir in the Braita itself says by Shabbat, Shogeg is okay, and Shvi'it is not okay. Why? Why is one okay and not okay? Mechdei Adoraita v'Adoraita. Both Shabbat and Shvi'it are dinim deoraita. So why wouldn't you see there's an internal stira in Rabbi Meir's opinion within the Braita? Maishna Shabbat or Maishna Shvi'it. What's the difference between Shabbat and Shvi'it? Ela, hotam kedetani taima. There's a unique reason, which is given over there. Amar Rabbi Meir, mipnei ma ani omer b'shabbat b'shogeg yikayim b'mezid ya'aker, u'b'shvi'it ben b'shogeg ben mezid ya'aker. What is the reason behind my opinion that on Shabbat I say shogeg, you can leave it? If it's mezid, you have to uproot it. But on Shvi'it, no matter what, you have to uproot it. Mipnei shisrael monim l'shvi'it, because B'nai Yisrael count to the Shvi'it, vein monim l'shabbatot, but they don't count to Shabbat. What he is suggesting, what he is saying is, if you plant something on Shvi'it, then 3 years later, the person is now done with Orla, and he adds to Riva'ai, on the fourth way that brings up the fruit, and then the fruits become Mutar. The person, every time they count the orla, they're going to say, the guy's going to say, this is a third year tree. The guy's going, okay, it's a third year tree. That means this year, last year, 2 years, that was Shemitah. The tree was planted on Shemitah. Meaning that the fact that it was planted on Shemitah will stay with this tree forever, because people, when they talk about the age of the tree, will quickly make a calculation in their head and say it was planted on Shemitah. If you tell me we're in the third year of the Shemitah cycle, and it's not Orla anymore, that means it was planted on the Shemitah year. And everybody will know that this is a Shemitah tree. On the other hand, when you plant on Shabbat, and later on someone comes to pick the fruits, or deal with the tree, they're going to have no idea that it was planted on Shabbat, not planted on Shabbat. There's no enumeration that will land you on Shabbat, or know that it was planted on Shabbat. Devar acher, nech shedu Yisrael ala Shvit, v'lo nech shedu ala Shabbatot. That Bnei Yisrael are chashud on Shvi'it, therefore we penalize them more harshly by Shvi'it, because Shvi'it is very hard to keep, and people cheat and plant things and say they didn't plant them, do all sorts of things to circumvent the Shvi'it, and therefore we put in stronger penalties with Shvi'it. By Shabbat, people keep Shabbat. They don't try to get around Shabbat, they don't try to violate the Shabbat. So Mar says, my davar acher, why do you have to bring me a second reason why to differentiate between Shvi'it and Shabbat? The first reason seems sufficient. Hachikamar, v'chi teima Shabbat, namni zimni demikla yom lamed b'Shabbat. Because there are some times where Shabbat turns out to be 30 days before the Shemitah. Dinata yomahu desalkale shato. He plants it on that day, it counts as a full year. V'lo lo salkale shato. If he doesn't do it, then it doesn't count as a full year. This is based on the principle that shloshim yom b'shana kishana. 30 days in a year is the equivalent of a whole year. If you plant a tree more than 30 days before the Shemitah, then the year before the Shemitah will count as 1 year of the life of the tree. That 30 days till the Shemitah year will count as a full year. Shemitah will be the second year of the tree, and then the year after Shemitah will be the third year of the tree. Now, that only works if you plant 30 days before the Shemitah year. If you plant less than 30 days before the Shemitah year, doesn't help you because it's less than 30 years. It doesn't count as a year. And it'll be the equivalent of planting on the Shemitah year. So again, that would be problematic. If you plant before 30 days, then you're fine because you have more than 30 days. What the Gemara says is there might be an instance where the 30th day before Shemitah was a Shabbat. So in order to get this tree to get a full year in before Shemitah, you would have to have planted it on Shabbat. Because that's 30 days before. The Gemara's reasoning over here is not so strong because you don't have to plant it 30 days. You can plant it 31, 32, or 33 days before. Just because you put it in 30 days before doesn't mean that's the only way to get it. But the Gemara is assuming here that people plant 30 days before because they want to capture that year in the 30 days. So they're likely to plant there. That means that someone who coming to you the year after Shemitah and you say this is the third year of this tree, the guy goes, okay, 1 year is now. Shemitah was the second year. Oh, the first year you planted 30 days before. What, 30 days before was Shabbat in the year before Shemitah. So people will know that you planted it on a Shabbat. So if you say that that is the case, then I still have another reason to separate between Shvi'it and Shabbat, is that Bnei Yisrael nech shedu ala Shvi'it, v'lo nech shedu ala Shabbat. We worry about people's keeping of Shemitah, we don't worry about their keeping of Shabbat. And therefore, there's a reason to be more stringent by Shemitah than there is to be by Shabbat. Tashma, and therefore that's the conclusion of the Gemara, davar acher, nech shedu Yisrael ala Shvi'it, v'lo nech shedu ala Shabbatot. The Rabbi Yehuda lo kasho. The Breita that we brought, we questioned Rabbi Meir's position from the Breita. Then the Gemara says there's an internal stira within the Breita in Rabbi Meir's Shita, but it's also true of Rabbi Yehuda, because Rabbi Yehuda also has a Shita within the Breita that has one position with regards to Shabbat, and one position with regards to Shvi'it. So why would he differentiate between Shabbat and Shvi'it? Especially given the fact that, from what we've seen now, Rabbi Meir believes, number one, Monim l'Shvi'it, and so that would make it always more chamor. If they're nechshad on it, then you would definitely want to penalize more severely in cases where people don't keep the mitzvah or nechshadu al zeh. So what are we doing with Rabbi Yehuda's shito? It seems to be just the opposite. He's more machmir the gabei mivasho b'shabbat than he is by shvi'it. So when it says Rabbi Yehuda lo kasho, v'atrei Rabbi Yehuda chamir lehu shvi'it. In his city, shvi'it was considered to be serious issue. How do we know that? Because you look at how people make fun of each other.
This person said to his friend, Dayar Bar Dayorta, you are a ger, the son of a gioret. So he was insulting this individual and saying, you're not really even Jewish. Then Amarlei, so he says back to him, Ana lo achle perot shvit kavadach. I at least don't eat perot shvit like you do. So his comeback to that insult was to say that you don't keep the mitzvah perot shvit, which is much worse. And you see from this that it was considered to be a serious issue where people were aware of perot shvit and kept perot shvit, and someone who didn't was enough of a reason to insult them or make fun of them that they didn't keep the mitzvah of shvit. And so therefore, in the atro of Rabbi Yehuda, shvit wasn't an issue. So he didn't need to penalize. He didn't have to have a knas shogega to mezid. But in Mevashel b'Shabbat, he does have a knas shogega to mezid. So we're going to stop here, 9 lines down on the top of Nundalet Amun Aleph.